Hello, and welcome to another bonus episode of the Radical Thoughts podcast. In this episode, I interview the communist theorist Soren Mao about his book Mute Compulsion. We discuss his theory of impersonal economic power under capitalism, what defines his approach compared to other Marxist theorists of power, such as Moishe Postone and Mikhail Heinrich, and what he would like to see from future theorizing on the persistence and effects of capitalism. Right now, you are listening to 22 Ghosts 3 by Nine Inch Nails, but in a second, you'll hear our interview.
Communist philosopher and postdoctoral researcher based in Copenhagen, Denmark. He previously worked with the journal Historical Materialism and is a member of the board of the Danish Society for Marxist Studies. His work, Mute Compulsion, a Marxist Theory of the Economic Power of Capital, has been translated into German and is forthcoming in English through Verso Books this year. So thank you very much for coming on. I'm excited to be able to talk with you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me.
So before we get too deep into the questions I sent you, I'm sure you're tired of having to have explained your book and summarize it on news things before, but just in case there's anyone listening who isn't familiar with it, could you maybe just go a little bit into what you mean by mute compulsion, what the book is about, why you pursued this particular, you know, research project for your dissertation and first book?
Yes, of course. And perhaps the easiest way to explain it is to begin with the title, Mute Compulsion, which is an expression used by Marx in the last sections of first volume of Capital, where Marx analyzes the historical emergence of capitalism. And it's usually the expression mute compulsion, it's usually translated as silent compulsion. And that's how it's translated in the most common English translation of Capital, the Penguin edition. But anyway, Marx is concerned with the historical emergence of capitalism in that section of the book. And his primary aim is to demonstrate how the creation of capitalism was premised on a lot of violence. It's in that section that he writes, there's a famous quote where he says something like, capitalism came into the world dripping from head to toe, from every pore of blood and dirt, or something like that. So that's his primary argument in that section, that the creation of the historical establishment of capitalism required a lot of violence, especially state violence. And then he makes this argument that when capitalism has been created, some of that violence can be replaced with what he then calls the mute compulsion of economic relations. So his idea is that capitalism relies not only on violence, not only on other forms of power, such as ideological power, but also on a abstract and impersonal form of domination, which is inscribed in the economic processes themselves. And he writes about this in various places in all of the different manuscripts that makes up his critique of political economy, his unfinished project, research project. But he didn't really collect all of this in a coherent theory of this form of power, where he defines what is this form of power and how is it related to other forms of power. And although there has been a lot of good Marxist research on this form of power about this question, I also felt that there was a need to develop a more systematic analysis of this concept of mute compulsion and to try to develop a theory of this form of power and distinguish it from other forms of power and try to be precise about what mechanisms of domination in capitalism, this concept is able to shed light on. So that's what I try to do in the book. So it's an attempt to construct a theory of this impersonal and abstract domination in capitalism, and to specify how this mute compulsion or economic power, which I also call it economic power, and to describe how this is distinguished from other forms of power, primarily violence and ideology. So I argue that this is the economic power or mute compulsion is an irreducible form of power. It's a form of power that it can't be reduced to an expression of ideology or violence. For example, these are three irreducible forms of power that are all necessary in order for the reproduction of capitalism to take place. And I think that there has been a tendency to focus on violence and ideology. And I'm not saying that that's not important. On the contrary, I fully agree with most Marxists. I would guess that violence and ideology are necessary for capitalism to exist. But I also think that there's a third dimension of the power of capital, which is this mute compulsion. So that's like the short summary of what this book is about.
To go into maybe elaborating how you attempt to analyze economic power, mute compulsion, and maybe distinguish the mechanisms you identify compared to some other Marxist theorists. Some of the work that you engage with is the kind of so-called value form school. I say so-called just because it's extremely varied. There's not necessarily one core set of agreements among all of them, but some of the more popular people that have also tried to talk about abstract domination or abstract impersonal forms of power come to mind. You know, people like Moishe Postone, Michael Heinrich. I've only been able to read the dissertation version of your book so far, but in there you do engage with them a bit. But I know with Postone, you take issue with the way that he tries to talk about, you know, capital as a subject of modernity, of capitalism. And you've also kind of agreed with, I think, people like William Clare Roberts, that there also needs to be more of a focus on what the actual class relation of domination is before just jumping to a level of, you know, value as such being dominating or abstract power on its own. You can correct me if I'm misinterpreting you here, but that's a lot of stuff. But I guess, can you elaborate on kind of maybe your disagreements or differences versus some of these figures that have also made similar points to what you're bringing up, and kind of where you try to locate the mechanisms or tendencies or processes that aggregate into this kind of impersonal power?
Yes, of course. And value form theory in its different versions is one of the main sources of inspiration for my book, and especially the work of Michael Heinrich, but also Postone. I think Moishe Postone's book is, as far as I know, I think it's the only book-length attempt to develop a theory of the abstract domination of capital. So, I agree with Postone on some very fundamental things, and I disagree with him on a lot of different things. One of the things I disagree with him about, and also this is also true of other of a number of other value form theorists, is his tendency to neglect class domination, or to his argument is basically that class domination is capitalism is a secondary or derived form of a more fundamental form of domination, which is the domination of the value form over everyone, or the domination of everyone by the value form or by value. So he argues that that in that sense, I would say that he separates what actually belongs together, because in my argument in the book is that the domination of everyone by value presupposes class domination, because it presupposes proletarianization, so it presupposes that a large part of the population is cut off from access to the means of their own reproduction, and thereby forced to sell their labor power, because if that if that class domination is not in place, then the generalization of the commodity form will not take place, and therefore value relations would not exist. So I think that there's quite a clear argument in Marx's writings, and a very convincing argument that the domination of everyone by the value form presupposes class domination, and in that and because of that we can separate it like Pistone does, and he's not the only one to do that. So that's one of my disagreements with him. Another one is as you said, the question about whether or not we should understand capital as a subject. And the reason why I go into a discussion of this is that I try to defend the expression the power of capital. And in order to speak of the power of capital, you have to be able to defend the idea that capital is something that can exercise power or have power. And most theories of power argue or presuppose that power is something that can only exist between relations, or can only exist as a relation between subjects or actors or human beings or something like that. So if that's true, then you would have to argue that capital is a subject or an actor. So that's why I discuss this this question. And some Marxists make that argument that capital can be understood as a subject. One of them is Stone. Another one is Chris Arthur. Mm-hmm. Third one is Robert Kurz or Werner Bonefeld. I don't find their attempts to describe capital as a subject convincing. I don't think it makes sense to speak of capital as a subject, or perhaps to be more precise, I think it makes more sense to describe capital as a social logic, in the sense that it's not a type of thing. It's not a category of thing, but it's a certain way of using things, and everything that can be bought and sold can be capital, because it can be used in order to accumulate wealth in its abstract form as money. And that's what capital is, a social logic. So it's a way of using things. And so instead of defending the notion that capital is a subject, I instead try to broaden the concept of power and argue that we can speak of the power of capital, not because capital is subject, but because power is not only a relationship between subjects, but it can also be a relationship between the emergent properties of relations between subjects. And that's what capital, among other things, that's what capital is. It's an emergent property, in the sense that it's a social logic that relies upon relations between human beings. It relies on relationships between actors or subjects, but it's not reducible to it, because it generates, or it creates, it gives rise to certain social dynamics which are not reducible to the human subjects that underpin them, if that makes sense. So that's my disagreement with Pistone on that question.
To throw around a overused word, in a way, it seems to me like it's kind of a dialectic of power as something that is both, in one way, an aggregate or outcome of relations between people in society, but also it produces its own kind of constraints and reinforcements of the very kind of behaviors that found the relationships, in a way.
Yes. One way of understanding what I try to do here is to contrast it to the two main tendencies in discussions about the concept of power. One, the first one is the traditional mainstream theories of power, where power is something that can only exist in relationship between human subjects or actors or something like that. And the other one is thinkers connected to new materialism or actor network theory, or object-oriented ontology, or similar tendencies. They often work with an extremely broad notion of power, where because of their broad understanding of what an actor is, and because of their defense of the idea of non-human actors, and that everything can be an actor, basically, then they also have to tend, they also tend to have a very broad notion of power. I think Bruno Latour somewhere.
I think I lost your audio for a second there.
Okay, yeah, I think there's something wrong with my headphones, but I'm just going to use the microphones on my computer now.
No problem.
I think he defines power as the ability to make a difference or something like that. And everything that can make a difference can exercise power. And I think that's like the other extreme end, right? That's a very broad notion of power, and also too broad, I think, because it becomes, well, that's a longer discussion, but it becomes impossible to distinguish between the social and the natural. And I think that that's of course there. They would just say yes, and that's the point. But I would argue that we actually need to hold on to a distinction between the social and the natural. And Andreas Malm has written a great book about that. Anyway, so I try to use the concept of power in a way that avoids both of these tendencies. So I'm somewhere in the middle, in between those two concepts of power, because I argue that power can be a relationship between human subjects, but it can also be a relationship between human subjects and the emergent properties of these relations. And I think that if we lose sight of this phenomenon or this level of emergent properties, which is dependent upon relations between human subjects but not reducible to them, then we lose the ability to understand how capitalism functions.
Since you brought up, you know, the theories of power that are maybe not in the Marxist canon as such, I have actually thought it's kind of interesting that in my experience, I certainly went through a phase where, you know, I feel like people who are into Marx tend to try and avoid talking about power as such often. And I think part of that is probably due to the popularity of the term among a certain wave of influence through post-structuralism. And then later on, maybe things like actor network theory and new materialisms and stuff. I originally reached out to you because we read on our podcast a book by Agamben. And frankly, I could not find anyone who wanted to talk about Agamben at the moment for particular reasons. But I am curious about how you might relate your theory of power to topics of power that came through those traditions as well. Discussions of things like biopower, which can be kind of controversial among Marxists. Some people say, oh, it's useful, but it's very particular. Other people say, oh, it's just kind of a fluffy word. It doesn't have any analytical usage. It's just pretentious, you know, something like that. In your work, if you're looking at discussions of biopower from someone like Foucault, do you see that as just addressing something completely different from your theory of power? Do you think that you're trying to develop a theory of power through the Marxist analysis that addresses something similar?
Maybe I'll begin with the question of how Marxists should relate to Foucault, because there's been a lot of bad blood between followers of Foucault and Marxists, and a lot of polemical debate. And I think that there's a lot of caricatures of Marxists and Marx and Marxism in the work, not only of Foucault, but especially of followers of Foucault. And but this same is also true the other way around. And I think that we could learn a lot from combining the insights and from Marx and Foucault. And I try to do that in the book. And one of the ways is one of the places where we can, I think, gain something by combining those perspectives is exactly in discussions about the concept of power. I think Foucault actually has a very good critique of mainstream conceptions of power. So I think his general concept of power is quite compatible with a Marxist perspective and quite useful also. But then his concrete analyses of historical developments and all kinds of concrete exercises of power are often more, well, I don't know how to put this, but I just think that sometimes it's almost like he avoids certain things because he don't want to sound too Marxist, or I don't know. That's I don't want to speculate about motives or anything. I just want to, in my book, I have quite a lot of criticism of Foucault, but I also try to take what I think is useful from his work and to use that in building a theory of the power of capital. And I think you're right about many Marxists being somewhat reluctant to talk about power. And there has been, certainly has been a tendency in Marxism to not use that concept that much. But on the other hand, I also think that there is a lot of good Marxist research about power, and some of the work that inspired me to do this book from scholars like Ellen Mikesens Wood or the value form theorists I mentioned earlier, they don't really have any problems talking about power. So there are also a lot of exceptions. But I think that one of the reasons why it can be a good idea to talk more about power in Marxist theory is that I think that framing the critique of capitalism in terms of power has certain advantages over, for example, framing the critique of capitalism in terms of exploitation. Because the classical critique of capitalism, where exploitation is in focus or given priority, tends sometimes to center the experience of people who are exploited and to assume that it is the exploited class in a like the narrow sense of wage laborers, people who sell their labor power, that are the truly revolutionary part of the working class, or the political subject of anti-capitalist struggle. And I think that one of the reasons why, or one of the potentials of criticizing capitalism with a focus on concept of power and domination, is that it's capable of articulating a broader critique of capitalism, which can center not only the experience of those who sell their labor power, but also all of the people who work outside of the wage relation, for example, by doing domestic labor, unwage labor, but also all of the people who are not even capable of selling their labor power, who are completely excluded from the circuits of capital, the global surplus population. So I think that that's one of the reasons why I think it can be politically quite powerful to focus on power and domination rather than exploitation when we're criticizing capitalism.
That makes me think of, in terms of other Marxist or Marxish groups that do talk about power, someone like Harry Cleaver, maybe, or the kind of new operaismo autonomist kind of groups, because I know that he also tries to focus about the idea that even exploitation is in some way about maintaining power. It makes me wonder, I guess, do you see, when you talk about power, do you see that as something that's distinct from, say, a discussion of like control? I don't know if that's like just a terminological.
I think, I think control is perhaps just one form power can take.
In the version of your book that I read, you talk about how the discussion of power and capital that you provide, you're kind of doing what Marx does in the first volume, where it's about the ideal average. It's not a list of all the concrete situations where power can be discussed in one way or another, but it's the idea that by providing an idea of the a discussion of the ideal average, you can provide a further way to analyze particularities in relation to this kind of more holistic picture. So I'm wondering if that, that could maybe involve things like discussion of struggles that are not in the wage relationship but are tied to power, or questions that are maybe more particular to like the way that racism functions in power relationships or something like that. And I know you've discussed commentaries by people who are more specific, like say James Boggs, who tries to provide very concrete, specific discussions of real subsumption and struggle. So in terms of your book being kind of an ideal description of power dynamics under capitalism, are there any particular kind of concrete specific political situations that you would be eager to see your insights maybe applied to or held up against or analyzed through? Or do you have any hopes about where this could lead in terms of how you hope it will help participate in the kind of political sphere?
Well, yeah, I think my hope is that, well, as you say, this is, my book is it's an attempt to build a theory of mechanisms of power which are operative in all forms of capitalist societies. And it's developed on a high level of abstraction. So it's a very abstract theory concerned with developing concepts. And my hope is that such a theory can be useful for producing, that the concepts I try to develop in my book can be useful for making concrete analyses of concrete situations in contemporary struggles against capitalism. So I hope that the concept of mute compulsion and the theories I developed can enable us to get a better grasp of what we're fighting against. And this idea of the ideal average of capitalism, the idea is that let me begin in another place. I draw a lot on concrete analyses of various historical and contemporary situations, and I use a lot of them as examples of what I write about. So, for example, I mention Marx's analysis of racism toward Irish workers among English proletarians in the 19th century. And I also have, there's a chapter in the book about the development of the agricultural production in the 20th century, where I also try to make some more concrete analyses. But in general, the book is the book is concerned with developing theories and concepts on a high level of abstraction, which means that I'm trying to say something about capitalism in general. And and I think that I'm not quite sure yet how to make the connections from this high level of abstraction to more concrete analyses. But that's something that I will, I think, try to continue to work on more. Yeah, and then I kind of just hope that it will be useful for people who are trying to understand the situation they're in.
Speaking about your political situation and context, to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about what goes on in Denmark, but I've seen that you've had quite a few interviews and things and debates around it. So I was kind of curious about how. I also interviewed one of the editors at Verso, who said that the book made kind of a big splash that comparatively, I don't know if I've ever really seen someone write a book about the abstract operation of capital that made a lot of debate in the US or something. So I was just curious if you could maybe talk a little bit about how the book has been received when it was first released and kind of the kinds of discussions that you've had about it.
Yes, of course. It was actually the first edition of the book that was published was the German translation, which came out in July last year. And then a couple of months later, a Danish version was published. And it caused quite a lot of debate in the Danish public, and which was like very surprising for me and also for my publisher, and I think for everyone. It was actually the right wing media in Denmark tried to well, they just tried to, they reacted in a way that was very predictable. I mean, they tried to paint a picture of me as like an old school Stalinist or something like that. And then they had like a lot of old conservative people, you know, interviewing conservatives and just trying to ridicule the project. But I mean, that's what could be expected, or that was expected. But I think it has, my experience is that it has generated like a lot of good discussions and like on the left, and I have been very happy to see like a lot of interest in the book and which has led to so many good political discussions also. So I'm very happy about that. And and I should also mention that there is quite a almost kind of a Marxist turn in Denmark taking place at the moment. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of interest in Marxism and in Marxist theory, and there's like quite a few people who are, you know, doing Marxist research and organizing reading groups and conferences and political groups and so on. So that's really nice.
The main other questions that I received when I put out some calls, if people wanted me to ask you things, some of them are things that were maybe a little too specific that I don't know if you could answer. Like, I know I sent you one where someone basically just asked if you had any theory of imperialism related to your question of power. And then, you know, if you have an opinion about what, you know, social or economic planning or coordination should look like, what you think would be the more beneficial way to proceed or something like that.
Actually, I'm thinking a lot about how a democratically planned economy could look like. And I think one of the most inspiring thinkers right now with regards to that question is Aaron Benena and his work, which I really like. And I'm looking forward to reading more of that. I think he's working on something, a book or something like that. And I don't really have anything to add, I think, other than just recommending his work. Regarding the question of imperialism, I think that's definitely a very good and relevant question, and it's not something that I really deal with in my book because I think it belongs to another level of abstraction. One of the difficult things about writing such a book is that, you know, I have to delimit the project in order to not to have to write like a 3 or 4 volume work. So I try to be very precise about what it means to analyze capitalism in its ideal average. And one of the things it means is that I don't really concern myself with the fact that capitalism as it exists in a system of nation states. And I think that belongs to a lower level of abstraction. And I think that I think that like the concept of mute compulsion or economic power would be relevant in order to analyze how imperialism functions today. And I think that if I recall correctly, I think actually Ellen Mikesens Wood does some of that work in one of her books called Empire of Capital. I think she tries to develop like an analysis of modern form of or contemporary imperialism, where she underlines how it's organized by means of the abstract and impersonal pressures of competition. And so I think that maybe it would probably be very relevant to look at that book and try to develop that analysis further. But it's not really something I have had the chance to dive into yet.
And I guess to close off, the one other question that I got on Twitter was someone who just said, well, can he say what he's doing next? So I don't know if you're still recovering after writing a book and doing your normal academic work, but if you have any future plans or research interests you could talk about, I'm sure people would be interested to hear. So,
yeah, I'm actually I've been working for actually a couple of years now on a project about Marxism and the body, which is actually an attempt to develop further some insights from mute compulsion. Because in the first part of the book, which is the more philosophical part of the book, I discuss Marx's analysis of human tool use and his comments on the human body, which I think there is a theory of the human body in Marx's writing, which has not been given the attention that it deserves. And I think that Marx's writings contain a lot of insights about the human body and the specifically human relationship to the rest of nature, which is very relevant for a lot of the discussions that's going on in what's sometimes called the corporeal turn in the humanities and social sciences in the last couple of decades. I think there has been an absence of a Marxist perspective in those debates, that's what I'm working on at the moment, to develop a Marxist contribution to the corporeal turn in the humanities and social sciences. And one of the things I find really interesting there is to develop a theory of human historicity, where I think it's possible to argue on the basis of some of Marx's writings that I think in some of Marx's writings we actually find the basis of a very convincing theory of human historicity, which is capable of explaining what historicity is, what it is, why it is that the human being is a historical being on the basis of an analysis of the human body and specifically human relationship to the rest of nature, which is where the use of tools is particularly important. So that's some of the things I'm working on at the moment. In addition to that, I'm also, as I said before, I'm thinking a lot about how a communist society could look and how I'm trying to move a bit beyond some of the anti-utopian tendencies in Marxism. I'm becoming more and more critical of that, and I'm increasingly feeling a need to have more concrete ideas about how a planned economy could function. And I think that there are some very interesting things that are being written, that's being written about that in these years. And I want to participate in those discussions also. So I'm also thinking about writing something about that. Yeah.
To me, all that sounds like it would be very interesting. I've definitely become more sympathetic to philosophies that try to engage with the body in a useful way, having moved into workplace sociology that were focuses on the firsthand experience of doing work, and the focus on the body, on tool use, on habit and stuff is stuff I would like to see more discussion of, especially when people talk about work and the relationship to work through history and things like that. And also I am glad to be seeing more stuff like Aaron Benanov and a return of discussions around people like Neurath, I think, is the planned economist, or Jan Appel, and these kind of figures who tried to think through things. So I for one, am very excited to see what you put out there in the future. But in the meantime, I think we can stop it here. And thank you again so much for coming on. I'm really glad I got to be able to talk to you about your book. I hope that people pick it up when Verso releases it in November, I think it is.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Patrick. Thank you for having me.
that's it for this bonus episode. Thank you again to Soren Mao for agreeing to come on and talk about his book, Mute Compulsion, available in English through Verso Books at the end of this year. I hope you enjoyed this interview. I'm currently working on my dissertation, so we're a little bit uneven about releasing our episodes, especially with trying to find guests and read our books together, so thank you for sticking with us. We should have our next discussion on Lac Lao pretty soon, so hopefully by the end of this month. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time.